5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room Radio Show, brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing. Experienced publishers of horror, noir, bizarro, and all things dark in paperback, ebook, and audiobook. You can find us at www.hellboundbooks.com. But first, get your feet up and enjoy the show.
July, summer is almost over. Xtina is going to be delighted because it's almost bloody Halloween first, you know. Yeah, it's, I mean, obviously, you know, it's still very much summer weather here in Houston. It's been well over the hundreds for forever now. It'd just be nice just for it to cool down into the 90s. I think that would be, you know, I'd have to get my hat and coat on then, I think. But anyhow, without further ado, I think we need to bring her on. How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm good. This week has flown by, and I thought it was Friday all day, and then I kept thinking, forgetting something, and oh my gosh, it was at the Panic Room tonight. It's not Friday.
Yeah. Oh well, so, but it will be tomorrow. Well, to be fair, it'll be Friday for you when we finish. So
yes.
There you go. But not for me. It has. I was just saying earlier on the intro there, you know, it seems like 2 minutes since, you know, my daughter was getting all excited for, you know, summer vacation starting.
Oh.
And now, you know, we're now, next week's a whole bunch of back to school. So I was going back to school shopping on the weekend.
Gosh.
And then she's got to go pick a Chromebook and ID up, and then obviously going to get a haircut. Oh, it's got, you know, and then the week after that, she's got a half day orientation, and she goes back on the 9th, which is in 13 days. I know.
Back when I was in school, it's countdown to Christmas, pretty much. yeah, we didn't go back until September, so it's just wild that the kids are going back so early. And
well, They broke up at literally, you know, the end of May sort of thing, you know. So she gets to 10 weeks. When in England, you know, you sort of break up in July. We only get 6 weeks. Even then, that used to seem like forever. I remember halfway through, I'd just be bored, you know. I was never a big fan of school, but I would be bored, you know. You played all the board games. This is England, remember, you know, because a lot of the time it's raining, so you can't actually be out. Played all the board games, and we board gamed out, and there's only so much you could do, and we would be bored.
I am super excited because I've been getting emails from Spirit Halloween, and one of their stores, I don't think it's even a store that's close to me, but it's going to be opening, like, I think tomorrow is the first day that they're opening.
I actually had an email today for some Christmas promotion, and I nearly threw up. Seriously. I nearly threw up. And I thought, no.
Well,
stop that.
You see my collection of you've seen my collection of the creepy dolls, right? You've seen those?
Yeah.
Well, there's not a whole bunch in that I like that are out. And this year, the Spirit Halloween, they have two new ones. And I am just beside myself. Like, I cannot wait. I actually want to order them online just so I can get them right now. Because, you know, they're not Halloween decorations for me. They're just
my funny enough,
amazing
I was
doll.
Watching, I thought of you. I was actually watching the new season of Ironically, I binge-watched it, obviously. Yeah. Watching the new season of Hoarders. And there was one there, this lady, and she hoarded Christmas and Halloween stuff. And to be fair, actually had less than you did.
Whoa.
You know, they're saying, look at all this stuff, and that's Xtina has got more than that. I was going to ring in, I was going to phone in. I said, I actually need to go, because she says she's got a lot more. A lot of it was still in box. I mean, it was, they actually had an appraiser come in, and a lot, because a lot was boxed and what have you, it was worth quite a lot.
Wow. We used to store this stuff in our garage in bins, and last year we had to take them down and put them in the crawl space underneath the house because I pretty much outgrown the garage space that I had. So I have 4 buckets, I think, for Halloween. And these are the big, you know, plastic tubs, the big ones. I got 4 for, like, the Halloween, and I made it up to 6 for Christmas. But if I buy anything else, then I need a new bucket. So, and that means I have to, like, fill the new bucket.
You can't have a bucket with you do realize that you have a problem, don't you?
I do. Especially, you know, the hubby tells me I can just, like, you know, cycle through the things. I don't have to put everything out every year. And I'm like,
yeah,
what?
You do.
What are you,
He doesn't understand, does he? He just doesn't understand.
No, he doesn't.
No, but...
yeah.
Oh, well, it's good to see. Obviously, sadly, we missed last week because of technical issues. It was entirely your fault. The technical issue was you getting stuck in traffic.
It was legitimate. It was scary for a little while there. I mean, they were, you know, saying that the roads were, you know, closed and they were flooding, and we were down in Pigeon Forge area. We had some stuff to do in Knoxville, and it just, we have bad enough signal there as far as like our phones and stuff, really bad signal. And it's just a great time for the, you know, Waze and everything just to be like, no, I'm not going to help you anymore. We're on the back roads back here. It's raining. We don't know where we are. And now our phone will tell us, you know, which way to go. And it was fun.
Excellent. So, but here we are, loud and proud.
Yay.
And what have you. So tell the listener what we've got on the show for them this evening.
All righty. I'm just going to introduce our first guest, and then we can...
You need to tell the listener what we've got coming on, because that's how we do things around here now.
Okay, let's see. On the show tonight, we have two amazing horror authors.
Excuse me, I've got the sneezes now.
Bless you.
Something's tickled my nose. Sorry, carry on.
The first author we have on is award-winning horror author Josh Schlossberg. And then a little later on in the show, we're going to have horror writer Richard Rumpel.
And we have the lovely Samantha as well.
We do, yes.
Don't forget the lovely Samantha. So without further ado, now I've completely messed up your thing, our first guest, Xtina.
Alrighty, our first guest of the evening, we have award-winning horror author Josh Schlossberg.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Oh, there you are. Yes, we can, Josh. How are you doing?
I'm quite well. How are you?
Good. We're good. For Thursday, you know, it's one more day to go. It's the weekend. But,
Thursday. Thursday is my Monday. I start my week on Thursday, so everything's confusing for me.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. The week has
so you, you have something. You have a Monday feeling right now, yeah?
I do, kind of, a little bit.
Oh,
well,
well, thank you for joining us.
It's a good way to start. Yeah, it's a good way to start
yeah, well,
your Monday then with us. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity, giving us all the opportunity, actually.
Definitely. I looked up, and we last had you on the show in 2018. I mean, that was a long time ago. It's a lifetime
ago, really. Yeah, that's when I was first starting to get my stuff published, was around about then. So, yeah. Long time since.
Wow, and we were still virtually embryos at that age at that time, you know. And here we are, still doing it. You know, I don't know. I don't know how it managed to hang on for so long, but here we are. And it's great, you know, because of that, like you said, you know, we have returning guests who were with us back in the mm-hmm. old days, you know, who were just starting out, who are now. You know, like yourself, who are now getting recognised, and it's really nice. It's like we've sort of been along with them for the journey, which is great.
Yeah.
Yep, we're all still alive and kicking. That's the important thing.
That's a good thing. Yeah, that is a good thing. So you're here to talk to us about Charwood, which I believe is out next month.
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. Yeah. So that is my. I call it the world's first eco-Jewish folk horror novel. I mean, if there's anyone listening who wants to correct me on that, I will stand corrected.
Right. That is a very, very specific category. I like it.
It is, but at the same time, it's just really traditional horror. It just has some flavors of eco-horror. It has some flavors of Jewish mysticism. It's definitely a folk horror book, and that's mostly what I wrote it as. I just wanted to give it a little bit different perspective, a little different angle.
So
but
tell
yeah,
us
I mean,
a little
I could,
bit more about
could,
him. Yeah.
Yeah, I could. So I will read the whole thing from beginning to end, and then you can, that'll only take about 6 hours, and then we can see how
awesome,
you.
Awesome.
How you feel
I love
at
the
that
readings.
Point. No, so basically, it's about somebody who starts to join in on what she believes to be environmental activism, and I've been an environmental organizer most of my life, and so she starts to join in on that, that these folks living in the woods, they say that they burn forests and it helps with climate change, and she was a little bit suspicious, and she was basically right to be suspicious because she gets kind of captured by what appears to be some sort of, you know, traditional folk horror cult, and things go quite awry, and she just tries to basically make sense of what's going on. And there's some elements of Jewish mysticism that she stumbles into, and she ends up using some of the lessons of her ancient culture to get herself out of a jam. So that's the gist of it, I'd say.
A lot of stuff going on there. I love the culty kind of like stuff, just because I think it freaks me out, and it touches on some like real fears I have, you know, dealing with that kind of stuff. And I'm always really interested when you say the word cult. I'm like, I'm there. I'm right there.
Sure. I mean, when you have folk horror, you kind of have to have a group of strange villagers that is
yes.
doing some weird stuff and sort of ensnares the unsuspecting outsider. So that's kind of one of those traditional folk horror tropes. So I wanted to be true to all of that. But I promise it's not going to be like the other folk horror books you've read. And yeah, it does have an environmental message. At the same time, it's not about preaching that. It's just playing in that world. And I do kind of take shots at everything and everyone, although it is ultimately as a pro-environmental message. And also just how the woods could be scary, but they could be really beautiful at the same time, and how we need nature to survive, but sometimes nature doesn't care if we survive either.
No, it does not.
I like
no.
that.
Well, funny enough, we had Ramsey Campbell on the show a few months ago now, talk about his novel out at the time, Fellstones, which again was folk horror. And of course, you know, whenever you talk folk horror, you know, talk always goes back to The Wicker Man, The original, dreadful, dreadful Nicolas Cage affair, but which I think, you know, that I think Wicker Man has to be, certainly for me, I think that's the yardstick by which folk horror tends to be measured. I mean, what was your inspiration for this one, Josh?
I have been on a folk horror binge for the last few years, really. I've always loved the subgenre. I just didn't know it had a name because I don't think it really was officially identified. Well, there's the more recent folk horror revival. That's when I became aware of the term. But folk horror has been around, obviously, a long time since, you know, the ancient folk stuff. But in the 70s and all of that. But I've watched, I wouldn't say the majority of folk horror films out there, but I watch a lot of folk horror stuff, a lot of obscure stuff. And, of course, yeah, the traditional, very well-known stuff like Wicker Man, Blood on Satan's Claw, Witch Finder General. Those are called the, what do they call it? The Unholy Trinity of folk horror, I believe they call that. But
right.
There's a lot of just rare, obscure ones that are often from Europe, something called Hagazusa, which a lot of people would call it a boring movie because it's just a lot of scenery in the wild. But it's a witch story, and I love it. It's just one of my favorites, like a real slow burn. So, you know, there's a really like countless ones, and each one I kind of get inspired by a certain aspect. And I've read a lot of folk horror novels as well, everything from, you know, Thomas Tryon's Harvest Home, you know, to Richard Gavin. He is an author who's in Canada. He's not super well known, but he's one of my favorite living authors. He writes a lot of folk horror, almost occult, mystical stuff. That one book that takes place it's all short stories, all that take place in the forest called Sylvan Dread. So those are all really heavily inspiring me, but really just everything I picked up over the years and really my time in nature. I spent a lot of time in nature in the wilderness, spent a lot of time in New England villages with old architecture and just kind of out of the way places. And those settings and that scenery really inspired me. And I'm living in Colorado right now, and there's this old mining town. I'm not going to name it because I based the fictional town off of it, but I call it Silvercleft. It's called something different, but it's an old mining town, and you drive up through this old burn. So there was a wildfire there years ago, and you drive through all that, and it's this tiny mining town in the middle of nowhere, and that's the setting for this novel.
Awesome. I definitely want to hear more. Do you have a reading for us? Not the whole book,
I could,
you know, but I mean, I would love that.
Yeah, I could absolutely read a section. Sure, I'll just start with maybe the first page. That's just probably a good way to introduce where it's all coming from rather than starting people in the mix of things and kind of confusing them. So, yeah, so I'll just start first page or so of Sharwood. Orna Tannenbaum's bones rattled as her Forester climbed the steep washboard road. To her immediate right was a ragged rock face that had been blasted out of the side of the mountain many decades ago. Down to her left, a 100-foot drop to the wooded valley, mostly in shadow as evening drew near. Sitting up straight, hands tight on the wheel, music off so she could focus, she thanked God for the warm, dry October, as even the dusting of snow on the near vertical slope may have slid her off into the void. The All Hallows Climate Action bonfire was scheduled to start at dusk near the historic mining village of Silvercleft, Colorado. Barely 15 miles outside Meadbury, the bustling college town Orna called home for the last couple of years, the narrow dirt track winding up into the Rocky Mountain foothills had already plopped her in the middle of nowhere. A queasy peek out the window to the spiky tree canopy below, and she shot her gaze back to what she prayed was the right road, drops of sweat breaking out at her hairline. Soon the road leveled out for a short stretch, and Orna came to a stop. In her native state of Vermont, even the most desolate back ways eventually took you past a farmhouse or some sign of humankind, that she discovered on her many solo camping trips around the Centennial State during the pandemic, a wrong turn out there could strand you in the wilderness. She grabbed her phone from the passenger seat and pulled up the map app. Sure enough, the white route coiling like a snake through gray nothing on her screen was the only way to Silver Cleft in the event she wasn't even sure she wanted to go to anymore. That's good enough for now. So it just starts off with her driving up into the mountains. And this is a classic slow burn stuff. So if you're looking for heads to be chopped off on the first couple pages, it's not going to happen. But on the next page, it does start getting pretty hairy. But I figured, you know, people can buy the book if they want to read all that.
Yeah, I actually do love a slow burn. I mean, I think
me too.
I think too,
you know, too often these days, certainly I read a lot of books as well, you know, and movies that they think it's got to be, you know, if there's no action in the first two lines, you know, but I'm with you. I love a good slow burn because it just draws you in and pulls you in, and then when the, you know, when things happen, I think it's the impact is much more effective.
Yeah, I like to do the domino setup thing. So I'm setting the dominoes up, mm-hmm. and then I kind of let them cascade. But you
just
know, you gotta find the middle. Right.
Yeah.
But you gotta find the middle ground. Like, I don't expect people to sit through pages and pages of just scenery and setting. So I do, you know, I try to start it in a suspenseful way. She's driving up a mountain road. There's an event that happens pretty quickly, and then, you know, things go back and forth. But yeah, the term slow burn, you know, sometimes does have a negative connotation. One can just see it as suspenseful, however you want to look at it. But I love that stuff, and that's what I'm most interested in reading and writing. And at the same time, it's like, I feel like if you don't build who the character is, if you just have stuff happen to them right away, it's almost like, who cares, right? Because who cares about the character if you don't really know anything?
But
there's a balance.
Definitely, I have to connect with a character, even if I don't like them, or even, you know, because, you know, I do have to ask.
Well, you don't have to like them. You don't have to like them to connect, you know. I mean, as long as that connection's there. I mean, a lot of the time it's the bad guys, you know, people connect with the most. People, they love a baddie, absolutely love a bad guy, you know, so... there's that. So, Josh, I mean, one thing I wanted to just pick up with you, you posted some brilliant stuff about independent publishers a few weeks ago. And I just wanted to chat about that, if that's okay.
Yeah. Well, I have every month I put out my Josh's Worst Nightmare newsletter, and I write what I call an auditorial instead of editorial. It's odd. So it's an auditorial.
Mm-hmm. Clever.
And I believe it's a couple months ago I wrote something called, I have to pull up the exact article, but I think Celebrating Small Press Horror is probably the article.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I write about different stuff, and I do. I like to champion small press. Small press is what's published me. Small press is most of what I read, and I also am an editor for a small press, Denver Horror Collective. We're a writer critique group, and we have events and book club and everything like that, but we also have a small publishing house.
No, that is fantastic. And I know, obviously, you know, Hellbound Books are, I guess, you know, it's a small, well, I know we're independent, there's a small press. We've been going... coming up to 8 years now, wow. You know, and there are detractors, certainly with more and more people getting access to, you know, self-publishing on Amazon and whatnot. As a lot of small publishers, you know, there are some negativity, there is some negativity around them, but what would you say? I mean, obviously, you know, we have you know, writers and would-be writers obviously listen to the show. What would be your advice to them about whether they're deciding whether to self-publish or approach a small independent publisher?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think it's up to the individual. It's up to what they're trying to do. I you know, I've been a part of small presses. That's who I submit to. I've self-published like one story. I may in the future self-publish, say, a short story collection or something like that. I know a lot of people who do self-publish, and they do quite well for themselves. You have complete and utter control that way. You get to keep basically 100% of the profits. Well, I mean, minus what the distributors like Ingram or Amazon mm-hmm. takes, which is a lot. Those are the folks. If people ever wonder who's making money off of small publishing, it ain't the authors, it ain't the publishers, it's the distributors.
That's true.
I'll get off my soapbox for that. But small press, you're part of a community. You're part of a larger thing. You're a part of a team effort. And, you know, mm-hmm. a publisher does have a name. They're able to get their stuff out there. There is a little bit of more credibility. There's a lot more in many ways credibility. But you get to be a community of other authors. That's what I like so much about it. Charwood is being published by Agata Triad, which is an imprint of Madness Heart Press. So the authors there, you know, we would normally just be doing our own thing, but we're all being published by this entity. So there's a bit of camaraderie there. And I think mm-hmm. it's just a really positive thing. And we need more small presses in the world. So we need more authors submitting to small presses. We need more small presses existing and staying in existence, because unfortunately a lot of them don't stay in existence. So, yeah, I see it as a mutual benefit, right? The publishers need the authors need the publishers. I definitely think small press is the way to go. And there's a lot more... there's a lot more wiggle room with small press. A lot of mainstream press, they're very set in their ways. They're very focused on just whatever the style and the trend is, and nothing can really go out of the margins very much. Mm-hmm. And small press experiments more and typically has some of the most interesting stuff going on.
Absolutely,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. That's why I sing the praises of that.
I think, I mean, you know, yeah, we, again, I guess, yeah, because we're not Simon & Schuster, but then again, you know, like you say, we do, you know, we will take a chance. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. sometimes it works and sometimes it does not. And funny enough, when I started as an author, I had my books went to small independent presses like Black Bedsheet, Nick Grabowski, Black Bedsheet Books, and I think Bloodbound Books, another one, Jay Ellington Ashton, or Ashton Ellington. So there's a whole bunch of them. It's actually only a few years ago that my agent said, why are you not got all your books within Hellbound Books? And well, so, okay. Funny if I said I didn't want it to seem like, you know, Hellbound Books were just there for me. But by that time, we had, I think, well over 100 titles. So I actually got all the rights back, so now all my books. Ironically, because initially I didn't want to be seen as self-publishing, they're all now within Hellbound. So technically, I guess I'm self-publishing my own books, which is odd. But the point is with the small presses is that as opposed to, you know, just publishing by yourself, as you say, Josh, I mean, you're among a whole bunch of other authors. So, you know, Hellbound Books, for example, we have, was it 140, 160 titles, whatever we've got now. You're part of that, you know. So, my philosophy is that every book is an advertisement for all the other books. So, we have one Hellbound book that is doing really well. People get hold of that, and then, oh, what else does this publisher do? So, it helps to drive people, you know, to your book, I believe, you know, rather than, and I've worked with people who've, you know, published, and they spend their one book amongst the, however many, you know, 300 million books on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And it's just there, you know, whereas, you know, and it's so easy just to get swallowed up, I think.
Very easy.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a brand, you know, and a brand can be a good thing. A brand can be oppressive in some ways when it's only like, we only allow these things and not the other things. But, yeah, all I know, mm-hmm. yeah, Hellbound Books, published my my third ever published short story was in a Hellbound Books anthology. So
oh, brilliant! Which anthology was it? Which one was it? Can you remember?
That was Demons, Devils, and Denizens of Hell two part two.
Oh, brilliant! Yeah, one of my favorites actually. Love
yeah,
that anthology. We need to do a three, I think.
Oh gosh.
Maybe so. Yeah, there's a few other folks that I know quite well, like PC3, Patrick C. Harrison the third.
We know Patrick,
In communication. There's a few other folks.
Yeah, we published Patrick back many, many moons ago when he was just PC3. And ironically, as the way the wheels turn, I'm actually working with him on Texas Roadkill 818 now, I think, and he's curating that.
Yeah.
We're publishing it, and I have a story in that, so that's exciting.
Ooh.
But it's just like you say, it's just that community, the same people, pop up and again, which is great, but it is, we over, say, the seven, nearly 8 years we've been around, we've seen them come, we've seen them go, they will pop up and, they're there and then they're not, it is a shame, but it is difficult. I think those that start a small press thinking they're going to be millionaires in 12 months,
yeah.
I think that's where the problem is, because and I'll tell you after nearly 8 years, you're not. Seriously.
Right.
You will not. It is a labor of love, there's some of us, we're still going. And like you say, we have allegiances with, like Crystal Lake, for example. We're actually working on a project with Joe right now, a couple of projects with Joe right now, so I think it's those that sort of set themselves against everyone. I think that's where, again, they fall. Because, like you say, it's that a community. I mean, I love your the notion that's what we try to be. And we've always said, we don't go for drama. We welcome everybody. We'll talk to, other publishers. We'll exchange information, anything we can do to help. Because I think we're all in this together. I think that's the key. It's a cutthroat world, and the more of us that bandy together, the more chance we've got.
I agree. Yeah, it's the whole rising tide lifts all boats kind of thing, which, sometimes in some versions of economics doesn't work, but I think in terms of small press horror, it does work.
Yeah, and I agree with you you look at horror now, mainstream horror, if you're not Stephen King, pretty much, look at the bookshelf, look at Barnes & Noble bookshelf, you've got Stephen King, Dean Koontz, maybe Dan Sinner, there's, three or four that, again and again and again, sorry, go on.
Yeah.
Oh, Stephen King's children.
Stephen
King's
son.
You've got Jim
Owen
King, exactly.
Yeah.
They're
good writers. I like their stuff. I'll read all that stuff, but I don't want to only read that stuff. It gets boring.
Yeah.
But then again, people like Philip Fracassi pop up, Felix Blackwell, and these brilliant original stories that dare to be different, and these obviously, being in the business, we get a lot of submissions, we speak to a lot of these authors, and that's where the new stuff is, that's where the talent is, and that's where it's the same with movies, it's the independent studios that are churning out the good stuff. The mainstream are doing the Marvel and DC and the Transform. Oh, the same old, same. Blumhouse. I mean, I was a fan of Blumhouse in the day, but he just makes everything mediocre. I'm seeing feeds about the new. For one, who the hell's allowed him to remake The Exorcist? And why they've remade it, I don't know. I haven't seen the trailer yet, but from what I'm reading, it's typical Blumhouse fare. He's made it bland, I don't remember the last good Blumhouse movie that I sat and watched, to be honest with you, because they're just all, he's got his formula, he's knocking them out cheap, but again, that creativity isn't there, we don't have the creativity of, like, The Ritual, for example, which was brilliant, and all these you know, non-mainstream, these independent studio stuff. And that's where the good stuff. I'm like you, Josh. I much prefer to read an independently published book, watch an independently made movie, because that's, you know, that's, for me, I it has to be different. I get bored of the same old, same old, same old.
Right.
Well, I was excited.
Go ahead,
didn't they, Insidious, didn't they do like a new chapter of that or something? And I
oh,
was excited
there's a new one.
Because
yeah.
I liked the original Insidious, but I heard some reviews that it really is bad, so bad. So, you know, and I wanted to like it because I really was a fan of their first movie. But, yeah, everything gets done to death and – you know, we're sitting here going, there's so much material out there. If you would just, you know, I do have to say that Barnes & Noble here, at the my local Barnes & Noble, I'm excited when I go in, and there's a lot of indie authors on the shelf now, and I think that's amazing. Like, I can go, you know, over to the horror shelf, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, we've had that guy on the show, we've had that guy on the show, we've had that guy. So it's definitely getting better than it used to be. I will
give
you that.
That is
getting
great,
better.
Yeah.
But
again, I think with the likes of – sorry, Josh, go on.
No, it's okay. Go ahead, finish what you're saying.
No, I was going to say, I think with Barnes & Noble, it's very much down to the individual stores.
Yes.
You know,
right.
So I guess each particular store manager is, you know, is into independence, then you're going to get that. Mm-hmm. But certainly the ones here are not. So what were you going to say, Josh?
Yeah, I was just saying that they're playing it safe, right? That's the marketable way.
Yeah.
You don't do anything that's too out there. You want to make the original flavor, and there's nothing wrong with the original flavor, but if you're into, you know, you want a little spicier kick, or you want like a lemon ginger component, you got to go elsewhere. But the indie is the proving ground, so the new stuff, if it starts catching on, then all of a sudden the mainstream will be like, oh, we'll take that, thank you very much. And, you know, I guess that's good. We influence what the mainstream does. And then when they get tired of it, you know, then they do things like they beat, you know, they zombies were popularized. Then it became very mainstream. They beat that into the ground, and then
you're
submit
still trying.
Something zombie, right? But if you submit something zombie to them, they'll say, "Oh, how dare you? You know, we don't do that anymore." It's like, well, because you guys overdid it, you know. So, but I still like zombies. I like all the stuff if there's a clever angle to it. I have nothing against that stuff. But all of a sudden, they were like, "Ooh, this is marketable. Let's do it all the time." And then, you know, it's like listening to your favorite song 15 times in a row. You start killing the magic.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I think, like you said, Zombies was, I was a big zombie fan. I mean, I'm a big, big Romero fan. I remember going to see the original Dawn of the Dead. It's still one of my favorite movies. And it was so refreshingly different in its day. Like you say, it's been pretty much, if you pardon the pun, done to death. But and again, we get submissions, and you know, we see a submission pop up, and oh, it's a zombie novel, and initial reaction is oh, not a, but give it a chance, you know. I waited years for a good original werewolf novel, because I'm a big werewolf fan, I have to confess. And one popped up, Carl Johnson, Invasive Species. We published that a few years ago, and it just literally from the first page, yes, it was werewolves, but it was different. I don't know if you're familiar with Stephen Graham Jones's Mongrels. Again,
I am.
Brilliantly different, different take on the trope. So it can be the same trope, whether it's vampires, zombies, whatever, but as long as it has that nice different twist, then you know, you've got my interest.
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think all those staples, there's nothing wrong with them. And but I think it's the greed of the industry where it's just like, okay, this is a thing that we know people like, so let's just do a bunch of subpar versions versus how do we get a new angle on this? How do we add to the genre? Instead, they kind of just they end up killing the subgenre by just doing it to death with mediocrity. So, oh well.
Yeah, it is. All right. Absolutely. And it's sad. it's sad. And yeah, and then, you know, you just look at the movie theatres now, and it's still, you know, Marvel and DC, and I think there is actually a new, I joke about it, there's actually a new Transformers movie. With my kids, you know, I sat through all of those, and I don't know what's going on. It's just CGI robot. I have to wait till the end of the battle scene to try and figure out who's, I mean, you know, the good guys are going to win, but, and it's just all going on and just, what? I just get lost, you know. Give me a good plot. Give me some crackling dialogue and, you know, a plot twist or two, and I'm happy. But all this, I think people are beginning to get fed up with all the CGI stuff because it's just everywhere. And it's just, I do, my brain switches off. As soon as it's like, oh, you know, yeah, he's got computer stuff, fighting computer stuff, it's like, well, you know, I'm fed up with this now.
We are just about out of time for our first segment. I want to thank you again, Josh, for coming back on the show, and we're definitely going to have to make sure it's not 5 years when you come back. So before we let you go, you have to tell us real quick where we can find you online.
Sure. You can go to joshsworstnightmare.com and find all my stuff there. I'm on a bunch of the social media as well. Josh's Worst Nightmare on Twitter. I think it's Josh's Nightmare, but you can find me that way. But yeah, thank you so much for having me on the podcast again. It was a blast. Definitely not wait another 5 years, but I'd be fine with every 5 years coming on. That sounds cool with me. But yeah, well, thanks for all everything that y'all are doing for indie horror. Really appreciate it. We all definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Great. Well, you take care.
Yeah,
thank you.
And we'll see you again soon. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now.
Time has beaten us yet again, so it is time for a break, and we'll be right back with the lovely Samantha after these messages.
The Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms, at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Extina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James, and darkpoetprincess.com for Extina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media. Facebook unofficial, The Panic Room Radio Show, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, the new Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Bigger, bigger, bigger hunger, love. Oh, you do? Don't be a stingy little mama. You're about to starve me half to death. Now you can spare a kiss or two, I still have many left. No, no,
no, no, no, no, no.
I ain't asking what to you.
No, 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 no.
You're so bigger, bigger, bigger hunger, love. Oh, you do? Oh, you do? Behind. baby. Give me just a one sweet kiss. No, 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 no.
Welcome back to part two of The New Panic Room, brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, we are back. Are we back? Are you back?
We're back. Yeah,
that was a bit, feebly.
It's late. I know. You know, I used to be getting my second wind right about now, but these days I'm like, oh my gosh,
starting to flag a bit. Starting to flag.
I'm getting old. Yeah.
We have all the delight, that is the wonderful, lovely Samantha coming up. So, that's the highlight of my week. That is literally the highlight of my week. The lovely Samantha.
I used to be, but yeah.
you're sick of her now. Well, yeah, fair enough. I can understand that. But I'm gonna because I like this new jingle. I'm gonna press this, and then we'll have the lovely Samantha on.
And now, it's time for another book review.
It's the lovely Samantha. Hello.
Hey guys.
Hey. Hello. Do you like your jingle? I think it's awesome.
I do like my jingle.
I think
He's
it's awesome. I think we need to have the studio audience cheer a little bit for you though. But maybe we'll work on that for next time. So, what have you got for us this evening, Samantha?
I have one, but I haven't read a whole lot lately, so I just pulled one that I had recently finished, and by recently, I mean 3 weeks ago.
And that's 2 weeks for me.
I'm really behind, but this is one that I randomly, just found scrolling through Facebook. This one's called You Only Get One Shot by Kevin J. Kennedy and J.C. Michael. This one had a really interesting premise. So you have the antagonist who sends an email out to four authors, and these authors are told that they are being blamed for a suicide, and they have to write a story, and it better be their best one because their lives are going to depend on it, and they have to post it online, and, she's going to read these stories, and the one that she likes the most, they don't die. She'll just kill the other one. And so you have that story, and then the four authors in the story that she emailed, you get to read their stories. So it's really a bunch of stories in one. And it was an interesting read. There were two girls and then two guy authors. I liked the guy stories better. Drexel's was my favorite because it's about feral children, which I know lots of things about.
Right.
Same. It was just an interesting, it was just interesting. I didn't think that it would dive into, the stories. I just thought that it would be a book about them writing the story. But you actually get to go through and, read it, and it meshes really well with the actual story that's happening. I did find it a little anticlimactic, though. I think I just expected a bigger ending. But it was a good read. I gave it, a 3.5 star.
That the idea kind of reminds me of Chuck Palahniuk's The Haunted. Did you read that one, James?
Palahniuk. Yes, I did. Yeah.
Yeah. That they had stories within the story and stuff, which
I like those.
Cool because,
it's almost like the anthology movies that they used to be quite popular. So I like that because you get a bit of everything. But they're all nicely interconnected. You said that was Kevin J. Kennedy.
Yes, yes. He does a lot of horror anthologies.
We've worked with Kev on a few things, actually. In fact, we had him on the show a few years ago, and because he's obviously he's got a very strong Scottish accent, and Xena couldn't understand the word he was talking about, bless her.
Great guy.
Great guy.
I know. James. What did he say?
I could understand. Obviously, being a Brit, I could understand him. So, he puts out some good stuff. We've just republished the revamped anthology Made in Britain that Kev and I put together. Again, I think it was 2018, 2019. So again, I didn't realize it was so long ago. Actually, I did a couple more short stories, another one of mine, and give it a bit of a revamp and a re-edit and new cover. And yeah, so always
That's
a
really
pleasure
cool.
to work with Kev. So he's a good guy. Good guy. As we were saying to Josh earlier, you know, us good guys need to stick together.
Yeah, I think that sometimes in the business, especially, you know, I'm kind of in both the horror world here and also in the romance online, especially. And there's a lot less bickering and, backstabbing stuff going on. A lot less in the horror community, and that we definitely could improve because I do see it from time to time, and I'm just like, oh, some more drama. And you know, Samantha, as well as I do, there are some troublemakers out there who you just know that they are stirring up some stuff all the time. And you're like,
yes,
oh.
And it's funny you even mention that because the horror community has been kind of bananas this week. I've scrolled past like a few statuses or like a few comments and rolled my eyes real fucking hard because it's like, can we stop? Can we stop with
the
drama? And
yes.
I'm hoping that it goes back to normal in like a week.
I'll tell you something, and Xena will back me up. To be fair, she bullied me into starting Hellbound Books, so this is all her fault. What was our number one, probably our number one mission statement? Do you remember?
No drama.
And we have stood by that all these years. We just steer away from it, and it'll pop up. It is dealt with not on social media. It is dealt with quietly, professionally, and we move on. You know, and there's people.
We could tell you some stories.
I guess it's like we could, but not on the air and not in public. You know, it's like with my personal life. You know. I don't live my personal life on social media like some people do, and you know everything about people. And I'm bits and pieces. I never post pictures of my kid. I'll post pictures of my dogs, fair enough. But you know, memes I find funny, that and the odd funny comment. But you know, my personal life stays personal. I think that's how it should be. Yeah. And again, same with business. You know, what goes on behind the scenes stays behind the scenes as far as I'm concerned. And, we've stood by that, and I'm proud of that. Very, very proud of that.
Yeah.
We made that before we even started the company. We stuck with it. So,
I think it's a very good accomplishment. It's easy to get sucked in. I find myself all the time, like, wanting to get involved sometimes on, like, comment threads or just posts. Like, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. You make a bad name for yourself, then nobody wants to work with you. Everybody thinks you run your mouth. It's not worth it. So I just, you know, I sit here and tell people that don't know anything about the book world, you know, like, about it. And it makes me feel better, but they don't know who the people are.
There was a guy a few years ago now. He went by, sometimes it's Richard Roberts, and then it was Robert Richards, and I think it was the same guy.
I know who you're talking about.
And, I mean, I blocked him after a while, but he was kind of, and I remember, I think one of the last things he said, I'm going to bring down James Longmore and Hellbound Books. I'm dying to just drop him a note and say, how is that going for you, Richard Stroke Robert? Because we're still here. You haven't brought this down. I don't even, you know, it's just like, what the fuck are you on, bucko?
And who is that one guy, Passione or what?
Oh, Nicholas
Passione.
Well, yes, do you know, we were in good company. I was really proud because he was a stalker at Ramsey Campbell, I think Clive Barker, and he stalked yes. and berated some of the greats. And, yeah, he settles in his sight. I think he still pops up from time to time.
If yes, I get emails.
You get emails. I've blocked him. He'd write these thousands and thousands of words of emails that just
didn't make an awful
lot of sense. And, again, these for me, you know, you treat it with humour. You know, like with Richard Roberts, he posted this big diatribe about me and about Hellbound Books and that. So I just posted a picture of my puppy. That's how long ago it was when old Pitbull was still a puppy. And I just posted, looking cute, just posted a picture of the puppy. And that was it. Just left it there. Best picture of the puppy.
Nobody can say anything about that. It's a puppy.
Who doesn't love puppies? Who doesn't love puppies? I love puppies.
Oh, gosh.
Puppies are great.
I want to thank you, Sam, for having a book for us, and hopefully you'll have a better week and better couple of weeks to come, and be able to read some more. And
we can have a Hellbound book next week. I don't know if Christina's keeping up with getting new books. You need me to make sure you've got the new Blake Rudman. You should have you not got that yet?
Yeah, I think that I have both of them.
Oh, the number's a third out now.
Yeah, I got to order that one myself too. So yeah, I'll get that one out to you.
So Xtina will be ordering that tomorrow. She orders her. To be fair, it literally only just came out. So
I
look forward to it.
I'm starting to sweat over here.
You need to be on with that one. So yeah, hopefully you can review one of ours next year. That'd be lovely. Lovely, lovely, lovely.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you so much, fabulous
weekend, Samantha.
Thank you guys.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, do you know, even when she's had a rotten week, she sounds cheerful, bless her.
She does. She's
always cheerful, but, So, what are we, are you going to introduce our next guest, Xtina, why not?
Yes, our second guest of the evening, we have horror author Richard Rumpel.
Hi, Richard. How you doing?
Doing great, James.
Good. Good. Thank you for joining us.
Oh,
where
it's
you
great to be here.
From,
it really
Richard?
Is. Calling good. From Indiana. I've lived all over the place, New York, Chicago, everywhere else, and somehow I ended up back in Indiana. So, you know, it's one of those places where you dream about having a good time. And that's about all you can do is dream. But anyway.
Do you know, and I must confess, and okay, I have an ex here because I am a foreigner. I'm not even sure where Indiana is. I mean, in relation to where I am, is it sort of, I guess it's up and across a little bit. Is it near the border with Canada or somewhere up that way?
Well, part of it borders a Great Lake. You know, it's basically squeezed in between Illinois, Ohio, and Kentucky. Which, you know, is not the destination places that most people have to go or want to go. But it's...
I happen to love Kentucky, so...
It's not bad unless you're an IU fan. I went to Indiana University, and unfortunately I lived 27 years in Kentucky, so in Lexington itself. And so when you're in the University of Kentucky territory and an enemy such as I was from IU, it can be hell. It truly can. But, you know, you live and learn. What can I say? But, it's great to be here. And happy Friday, Xtina.
Oh, yay. Thank you. Yes. I live for the weekends. I do. James keeps me busy all the time now. And so all week long is just like a blur. And then I'm like, oh, God, I made it to the weekend. And, you know, so, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. But you're here to talk to us tonight about your book, Pumpkins on the Road. There's nothing like living in the small town or being murdered in one. I love the tagline. So you have to tell us a little bit more about it.
Well, Pumpkins in the Road or On the Road, actually, the idea came to me when I had lied to my wife about heading over to a little larger town to buy a Christmas present. And I had to delay at a store, so I had to make up some excuse when I came home to tell her how come it took so long. In essence, I was sitting at a stoplight, and a pumpkin truck turned the corner rather fast and headed on down the road, and I thought to myself, what if that fell over? What kind of delay would that cause? And out of that grew the book, Pumpkins on the Road. So it's basically a story about small town USA, a little small town in Midwestern United States. All the drama and fun that goes on in a small town, you know, politicians who enjoy being a big fish in a small little pond, and people that love being with each other. You've got your old people, your young people, a couple of fast food restaurants, which are, tend to be the major dining places, police department that needs funding and nobody is willing to come up with the money to do so. And everybody just seems to get along for the most part. But then in turn, something starts happening in this town. There's a murder one night, and it's a pretty bad one, totally unexpected to an individual that it was to a child, actually. And so everybody starts to get up in arms, and the next night there's another murder. And then from that point on, it's not a question of if there's going to be a murder that night, but how many. So it kind of grows from there. Okay. All that from lying to my wife. What can I say?
I absolutely love getting to know the inspiration behind a lot of the novels. That's a pretty cool one. And the fact that she probably now knows that why this book was birthed, it's either a funny story or she's still mad every time she hears about it. So.
Well, actually, we moved into a house here. My father passed away 2 years ago, and I was the one, unfortunately, to discover his deceased body. A few days after the fact, and in a house that did not have any air conditioning at the time in the middle of July. So I took 2 years away from writing. I've only been writing 5 years, and two of those were taken to clean up the house, as he was a major hoarder. And I did it all myself, and then after getting everything out of the house, I found all the damages that the hoarding had caused and such. So I ended up having to basically take the house apart and put it back together again. And I've never done anything like that. You know, thank God for YouTube's do-it-yourself videos and such. But from that point on, then, this is my first book, actually, after that. So it's been a two-year hiatus before this book came out, and it felt good to get back to writing again. But as far as my wife is concerned, you know, she stays upstairs most of the time. I don't care. But, you know, she's a wonderful woman. If she was here, she'd tell you the same thing. But anyway, but Pumpkins on the Road is, you know, it in my writing, I'm a simplistic writer. I consider myself more of a storyteller than I do an educator. And there's nothing wrong with educating. There's a lot of people out there that want to use words that the standard individual, you know, or the high school graduate that didn't go to college and such, they have to look up in a dictionary. And that's the last thing in the world I want my readers to do, is to have to stop the story and figure out what I'm trying to say. So I try to write very simplistically, in words that anyone can read. I actually found out that a few of my books have ended up in a prison, and that the prisoners are writing them, of all things. Yeah, exactly. I don't know if they're getting ideas from them or what. But, you know, and a lot of those individuals are not that educated. So it's something, again, I want to tell a story. I consider myself somebody like sitting around a campfire telling a long 6 to 7 hour story and, you know, making everybody enjoy it somehow, some way. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely like the fact that you said that you use, like, you know, everyday words and you don't try to fluff it up any, because I've definitely read authors who, while I think that the story was great and I wish, you know, it's just too flowery. And if I have to work too hard at it, if I have to like stop and like try to Google a word to figure out what they're talking about, it just takes me out of the story. And, you know, it is funny, but because you can tell a person who uses big words because that is how they talk, which I can say James Longmore. There are some big words in his books, but he talks like that. So it's like, you know, you're like, sure. Oh, well, I get it. But then, you know,
in my defense, I've told this story before, you know, one of my impede, my one of my books from years ago, I have a review on Amazon. Somebody pulled me up for using, showing off, he said, using big words.
yes.
And I was amused by that, but, and anybody who knows me, you know, I speak like that. I can't help it. Sorry.
You know, I have nothing against people using vocabulary and trying to expand other people's vocabulary. I really don't. But by the same token, there's room for everybody in this business.
Yes.
And I'm just wanting to be simplistic. I've read Tolstoy's Resurrection and War and Peace and all these other great, great classics and such back during my days in the military. And I enjoyed them, but they were slow. And back then, we didn't have the web. I'm an old fart. I'm 69 years old. So in turn, you know, I went through all the days where you actually had to turn pages to figure out what a word meant. And it slowed up things. And I would lose track of the story at times by trying to figure out and expanding my own vocabulary with that. So in essence, it's just a matter of what you're comfortable with is really, you know, as the individual you describe, he's comfortable. So great. I wish him the best, and I hope everyone enjoys his books. For somebody that may not have that type of education value or somebody that just wants to sit down and have an easy read, that's what I'm here for. So, you know, that's just my philosophy.
I've been kind of the same thing in my poetry. I write poetry, and oftentimes somebody will review it and say, you know, she broke down something, you know, a really complex feeling in you know, simple terms. And part of me is like, simple? What are you trying to say? But then I'm like, oh, well, you know, this is people understand this. People connect to it. And I've read poetry that I think is absolutely beautiful. But I'm like, wow, just the wording they use and you know, what they're saying, I'm like, even though I think it is beautiful, I don't have any idea what they're trying to say here. So
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so, there is something for everyone because, that's why there's so much stuff out there, I think, is because we all have different tastes. And that's another thing when it comes to reviews. Oh, my goodness. I always look to the bad reviews first just to see what they have to say. And it's funny, if you ever read, you know, you take your very favorite book, you just love this book so much, and then look up the bad reviews, and you're like, holy crap, these people are tearing this book apart, saying how much, you know, how horrible it is, and it's your favorite. So don't ever trust reviews. That's definitely
what it's like anything to do with art, any of the arts, you know, music, painting, books, movies, whatever. And again, it's the old adage, you can't please all the people all the time. You know, it's like for me, when people go raving, Picasso, for example. Oh, Picasso's great. What it's rubbish, to be honest.
Yeah.
they don't look like people. They're just all over. It's a mishmash.
I actually went to the Smithsonian to see some Picassos. Oops,
yeah?
Sorry, go ahead.
And was it rubbish, or did you like it?
Well, I kept asking different guards where they were at, and I kept being told, but kept getting turned around. I didn't know they were all interlocked with their intercoms or their walkie-talkie system, so I must have looked like a fool. But when I finally saw the Picassos, I'm like, I spent an hour and a half trying to find these. You know, it's, yeah. You know, maybe somebody that's educated in art would have more of an understanding of what he was trying to do. Myself, I'd rather look at a Da Vinci or something along those lines.
Going to the
over in the Netherlands was phenomenal for me. So
it's down to personal choice, you know. So, I mean, for me as a writer, and I guess you both of you, I mean, we're all writers together. You know, it's not a case of like you say. You know, I'm choosing a big word. I'm choosing to try to whatever. It's the right word. You know, and whether it's a simple, however, it's the right word to put across what you are feeling, you know, what is in your head. And it doesn't matter what that word is, and different people interpret that in a different way. And that's how I see it. If that's the right word for that particular part in the sentence, that's what's going in. You know, I don't second guess, and I sure as hell do not dumb down. You know, if somebody's got to look a word up, yeah, fine, then they've learned some. I will, you know, I like that. If I'm reading a book and I'm come across a word I don't know, and I will look it up, and brilliant, you know, I've learned something from that. I've learned a new word, which is great. And I think people don't like learning much these days, you know.
They really don't. And one thing I learned from my audiences back when I did stand-up comedy for 6 years was that it has to be the right word for your audience. Okay?
Yes.
And if you can't write for a group that is not going to be interested in what you have to offer, you have to work for those that, in our case, will read our books. When I did comedy, it was, you know, for the audience that was in front of me. I wouldn't want to make fun of their town when I had a town next to them that everybody made fun of. So, you know, it was that they would take offense by that. So you've got to be able to see who your people, who your fans are, so to speak, and try to cater for their instincts to an extent. You know, that's just, again, that's just my opinion. Everybody has one, you know, so.
No,
I'm not saying mine is
right.
It's just there. So.
Now, Richard, with you talking about doing stand-up comedy and now you're writing horror, do you ever do you write your horror with a little bit of comedy?
Oh, I have to. Yeah, everybody needs comedy.
Awesome.
Okay?
Yes.
There's
yes,
always a little bit of comedy
that
in my books. You know, that was something back – I know this sounds really, really strange, but it's always been my opinion, whether back when I was doing radio or – you know, when I was doing stand-up comedy, or even when I left comedy and became a corporate training director, I wanted to take people's minds off their problems for just a short period of time and make their day better. And if I could get them to laugh or get them to smile one time during their day, I took their mind off the stress and tension that they were sustaining during that day. And I helped them out maybe. You know, I might have stopped somebody from going into a post office and enjoying what an AK can do or something. You know, I don't know. But, you know,
I like that.
It was just a way of making them better is what it was. And I do the same thing when I write. I want to give them some comic relief, but at the same time, I want to keep them in that fantasy world so they can leave the mundane situation that they've got as far as stress and such behind them and enjoy what's sitting in front of them and what they're reading at that time. So,
right.
You know,
yeah,
again, that's just, what I'm going to say, it's something I do. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yes. No, I was going to say, I wanted to hear more of Pumpkins on the Road. Did you have a reading for us, an excerpt?
Yeah, I sure do. Mine's a little longer than
Yay.
Josh's, I hope, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's
this
fine.
Is kind of,
yeah, I think it was pretty quick. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. The setup on this is that, again, we're talking about a small town. This is one of the individuals in the small town. She's an elderly lady. She's just come back from a Bible study one night, a church prayer meeting type of thing, and she's walking up to her house. Okay? So here we go.
Okay.
With Bible in hand, Edna Williams shuffled up the walk to her house. The minister's wife had been kind enough to pick her up for the Wednesday night prayer meeting. As it sometimes happened, the prayers had been long and the meeting the same. It had run much later than she'd expected. Needing to get their youngest to bed, the minister's wife had asked one of her teenage daughters to drive the woman home. And wanting to get back home to call her boyfriend, the girl had driven off before Edna had made it to the porch. "These young folks are always in a hurry," she mumbled under her breath. "Wasn't like that when I was young. No, sir, you didn't see me rushing off to call a boy. If they wanted to talk to me, they could call me. I wasn't about to chase after them." The rubber tip of her cane landed on a fallen branch from a huge oak tree in her front yard and nearly sent her flying. "Oh, dear, I didn't see that one. My eyes just aren't what they used to be. Even with these new glasses, I don't think they make glasses as good as they used to. I remember how happy I was to get a new pair and be able to see clearly. Now, no matter how many I buy, I just can't see that well." The three steps to climb up the porch were only a few yards away. It would be a struggle to get up them, as it always was, and would take a few minutes, but Edna wasn't in a hurry. She was too busy thinking about the first time she'd gone up them. George was so strong in those days. His job at the mill was a hard one, lining up all those logs to be cut. I remember how much he appreciated me massaging his used muscles and working out the cramps after he'd come home. George was a true gentleman, and I tried to be a good wife to him. We used to love being together, but I remember how mad he would get when I'd be busy grading papers at night and not paying attention to him. "One day I'll be gone and you'll miss me," he used to say. I'd chuckle and tell him he was going to be around a long time and then go right back to grading. But he was right. I do miss him. I miss him so much. I didn't realize how much I loved him until he was gone. He was so kind and loving, not just now and then, but from the start to the finish. Not the finish. It's not over yet. We'll be together again someday, one day. And he'll hold me in his strong arms just like he did when he carried me up these steps that very first night when we were married. We didn't have the money for a honeymoon, but we didn't need one. We had each other. It was so wonderful. God, I really miss him. Too many memories and so much love. Tears came to Edna's eyes. The first night had been so long ago. The years they'd shared had been wonderful, but had gone by so fast. Why did the years since George's death seem to drag on? Why couldn't they have gone by like the others? They'd all already be together if they had. Her fingers reached for the rickety wooden handrail as it had stood the test of time. Now, like herself, it was getting old and feeble. It wasn't as steady as it had been once. Neither was she. Putting her foot on the first step, she gathered her energy and was able to take it with the first effort. The second one hadn't been as easy. It had taken a lot out of her. She was breathing hard, trying to pool all her energy for the next effort. She stood there for a minute, looked ahead at the third step, and tried to catch her breath. Her age was showing and her strength dwindling. Mustering everything she had, she pushed off as hard as she could and reached the top. Success! It was fleeting. Before she could grasp what was happening, something grabbed hold and yanked the back of Edna's sweater. Completely off balance, the woman fell backward down the steps, her head landing hard against the cement walk. Stunned, Edna only caught a blurred glimpse of the iron hammer coming fast at her forehead. The pain was intense, but lasted only a split second. Then there was George with his arms open to welcome her. Edna rushed to him, holding each other close. They vowed to never let go. This was the moment for which she'd been waiting so long. Her heart fluttered when she realized that this time it wouldn't be for only a short time like they'd had before. It was forever. And that's it.
I was enjoying that.
And I was thinking that there's not enough people called Edna these days. It's one of those great names that sort of is sadly sort of dying out with the older generation. Like Enid is another one, you know. And but it's as soon as you give a character a name like Edna, you know, immediately you have that mental image of what Edna looks like, you know. And it's but that was great, beautifully read as well, I have to say.
Yes.
Do you narrate your own audiobooks by any chance?
You know, I've actually started one and was told that I was talking too fast, which is a point that I have always had to watch. I was born in Rhode Island, so the fast talking is a natural to me. And then in radio, when I first started in radio back in the early 70s, it was the fast-talking radio. You know, it was whether the weather's bad or whether the weather's good, we're still going to bring you the weather, whether or not you want to hear about the weather. So here's the weather.
Of course,
it slowed down over the years in FM and that sort of stuff. But, you know, that's something I want to do my own audio books. I don't know, you know, I've got so many things started, and just as I was starting to do the audio book for it was Gabrielle, A Tales from a Demon Cat book, it's a hot seller. It was a hot seller in England when I put it out. In fact, it seems like the English audience gets my stuff a lot more than the American audience for some reason. But my dad passed away, and that's when I had the 2-year interruption, and actually I'm just now getting back into the swing of things and writing again. So the audiobook is on the schedule, but it's not a high priority right now.
Awesome.
I get that. But you have a great voice for a great voice. I think it's from, yeah, you say it's one. I mean, we obviously work with a lot of narrators, and I mean, I've seen her when she, the other time she's done readings on the show, and she just she gets quicker and quicker and quicker and quicker and quicker. But it is a thing, you know. I'm moving over here from England. You know, obviously, apparently, I'm told I have an accent. I've never really picked up on that myself, but I know exactly. But I've had to learn to slow it down. It's funny, like, yeah, I did stand-up comedy when I first moved, because I used to, in England, I sort of did it over here as well. But again, because I was, when I first got here, I was doing it at the pace that I would do for my British audience who could follow me. And here, I remember the first couple of times I did it, it was just, you know, delivering some killer lines and just blank. And it was actually somebody came up to me and said, you know, we could sit and listen to you for hours because we love the accent, but it's too fast. We don't know what you're saying. We don't understand you. And I had to really work hard at slowing it down. But anyway, I think once you've cracked it, it's, you know, it's doable, but it's hard work. It really is.
Yeah, I had the same problem you had when I moved to the South, actually. I was a Yankee moving to the South, and people kept saying, we can't understand you. I had to learn how to say dog and grit and all that sort of stuff. You know,
and fixings. Fixings.
Oh, I hate to do this. We've had so much fun, Richard. You have to promise to come back.
Okay, sounds great. I'd love to.
Yay. Yeah, I was going to say, I thank you so much. Oh, and I also was going to say, Pumpkins on the Road, when you send out the signed copy, that's XTINA.
I understand.
So thank you so much for coming on the show, and I can't wait to have you back. And, real quick, tell us where we can find you online.
Online, I've got a website at www.richrumpel.com. My Amazon page, of course, is there. All my books are available on Amazon. There's 5 books, full-size books, as well as 22 writers' anthologies that I've got short stories in. I'm on Facebook, X, I guess it's called now instead of Twitter, Instagram. I'm pretty much everywhere. Just look for the old fart and you'll find me. So
awesome. And for all of our listeners out there. For all of our listeners out there, go out and find Pumpkins on the Road by Richard Rumpel. And thank you so much. We can't wait to have you back.
Thank you so
Thanks
much.
Thanks a lot,
I
Richard.
Really
you have a great
it.
Rest of your evening. Okay, bye-bye.
You too, James. Thank you, sir. Bye.
Bye-bye. And it is. I know, wasn't it just? And it is time, I'm afraid, to say goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight.
fly away. Bluebird, fly away for me to a place somewhere far across the sea. Fly away,
fly away.
Another place.